Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Wes, what's up?
Well, we have a new release of RX, and we have a lot of exciting stuff in there. And first of all, I want to thank all of the users out there, especially people who are giving feedback on the forums and on the Channel 9 posts, because we're taking that feedback that they're usually giving us and directly incorporating it into our RX release. In fact, most of the release is based on the feedback, direct feedback from that. And that's, so you're having an impact, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so very much, and continue to provide us feedback as we go along.
Yes, definitely. Big thanks. So, Wes, can you show us some of the new stuff that's in this release?
Yeah, absolutely. So the most exciting thing and the biggest thing is we're changing how the creation of concurrency works, as well as how synchronization contexts play in with RX. And so let's start by looking at how we do it today, and then talking about the problem we're trying to solve, and then we'll back up and go from there.
Okay.
Okay, so today what we do is we have... observable context. Now this thing is loathsome, but besides being loathsome, what it is also a global variable, a global static variable. So it's like this thing is the default synchronization context which RX tries to use with everything it does. So like when you say like observable at return, then it would try to use this thing to post the message when it comes out the other end. But this has some bad effects. And the reason why we do this, so now what is the problem it's trying to solve? The problem it's trying to solve is that there are a number of operations in .NET which are threadifying. And so for example, just subscribing to a Windows Forms or a WPF event is actually threadifying, because if you do it from a thread other than the dispatcher or the write message loop on the Windows Forms, then you actually can have data corruption errors inside of your list of handlers.
And in Silverlight, they throw an exception if you try to do that, right?
That's true. That's a very, very good point. So there are, that and a number of other operations are threadifying. That's just the world we live in. That's okay. We have to deal with that. So they have this thing called synchronization context, which allow you to post messages or send messages to the correct place to run something if something is threadifying. You also have like the dispatcher as in the task scheduler and some other things, which brings up another thing you want to do is introduce concurrency. And so, for example, if you want to do something and you don't care where it's done, but it's, you don't want it to be done in the current thread of execution, then it's like, well, where can you do this and how do you parameterize this? And do you use a synchronization context? Do you use a dispatcher? Do you use a task scheduler? What do you use, right? And then there's another problem, which is that a good portion of the concurrency that RX create is time-based. And unfortunately, there's no abstraction for dealing with how time is created in .NET or how time-based things are created in .NET. There's like this new task scheduler, which is great. It deals with how to create units of work, but it doesn't do with how to create units of work that have to happen at a certain time. And so there's this threadifying part, there's this creation of concurrency, and there's creation of concurrency with time. And so how do we solve this problem? So in the current release, what we've had until now, we have this observable context, which tries to do this. But although it solves the threadifying problem in some sense, although it's arguable because the context can kind of change underneath you and you can't really parameterize it very, very easily, we did have like this observe on, subscribe on thing, which we'll talk about more in detail later on. But it doesn't quite fit the bill. And there's another problem it actually introduces. Is a lot of times when you're introducing concurrency, you have to be careful about how you do it, because it actually can introduce not only threadifying problems, but also performance problems. So, for example, if you do posts when you're already on the right synchronization context, then it will slow things down, because basically in most cases it will put you at the end of the queue, the message queue again, as opposed to running immediately. So things can run now between you and the rest of your continuation. And that's a problem. And so you see all sorts of other things. And then another problem is if you create time-based things and they don't happen on the same synchronization context that the rest of your things are running, then the timer is basically running over here, sending messages to some synchronization context over here. And this guy might not be running in sync, and so he might be filling the buffer faster than it's being pulled out here, or vice versa, or whatever. You can get like this this problem where they're not in sync, and so it's just generally just a problem. So it's performance problems, concurrency creation problems, threadifying problems.
So if it's so bad, why did we come up with it in the first place?
Good point. Well, so what do we? How did we get there? So RX has been in the making for about two years now. I mentioned it before in videos. It started out when we were working in Volta, And we needed to deal with events and asynchronous computations happening in AJAX applications, and that was kind of like the birth of RX. In fact, I think Charles has some way old videos from like 2 years ago, pretty much, where we talked about what we had then, which is similar if you look through certain colored glasses to what we have today, but it's quite evolved. But over that period of time, RX has actually not changed how it solved these particular problems for pretty much the whole duration of it. And we didn't change it until just a few weeks before we released externally to this other mechanism. And that was a mistake, by the way, so don't do that if you're out there. So what we did previously is that we just, whenever you created concurrency, things would just happen wherever they happened to happen. And at any point, if you had a threadified operation, then you would just decorate it with an observon. You'd say, like, you know, X is observon, and then you'd put your threadifying action here. Your synchronization context here, and then you would do your threadifying operation after this point. And so this is what we used for almost the entire time, and we just let things just kind of flow however they wanted to do. We lived in the free-threaded world explicitly. We didn't have this global variable thing. Now, the reason why we changed is because we did something that we typically don't like very much, which is we focused on a couple particular scenarios, and the code could have been shorter and we could get rid of some of these things by having some best place to run it, like the kind of default parameterization of this thing. And so we kind of tried to make the code shorter, but in the process we made it we made it non-compositional, which is a very bad thing, and we also introduced some other problems. Now, it should be noted that the original solution is actually better. It did suffer some other problems. For example, it didn't really solve the fact about how you create concurrency. You still had the thing that you had the timers created, but the timers wouldn't be like Windows Forms timers or free threaded timers. It was always just the timer, and you had to post messages to the UI thing if you wanted to do it, which meant you could get out of sync again. So it wasn't the full solution, but it was more correct than what we have externally right now. So we've thought about this a lot, and we appreciate the feedback because a lot of people out there actually recognized, hey, this isn't quite right either. They look at it and they say, this doesn't feel right, there's this global variable here, I have these problems with timers getting out of sync, and they noticed all the problems that were there. And so that was kind of, it confirmed our suspicion that this was not the right thing. And it also points out that this is probably not the whole thing either. So let's talk about now where we're going to go going forward. And so what we were going to do is we have to start by introducing a first-class concept of what we've talked about. So we talked about how we need to be able to parameterize where concurrency is created, and both time and not time. So let's look at what that means. So we introduce a new type, iScheduler. And before you think .NET already has enough of those, let me explain why we have it. So it's an interface, and we have two methods on it. iDisposableSchedule, which takes an action, and iDisposableSchedule, which takes an action and a time span. And that's the whole interface. Now with this, what we do is you basically have this thing that abstracts away how concurrency should be created in some particular execution context. So for example, you can have a scheduler that represents the dispatcher. And if you schedule a unit of work, then it will schedule it to happen on the dispatcher, and if you dispose of it, that means you canceled it, if it can be canceled. You can schedule something to happen, but only after a certain amount of time span has passed. And again, you can cancel that. And so based on this, this is kind of like the basic, the most general thing we can think of. You might ask, well, why don't we have, for example, like priorities in our abstraction of schedulers? Well, what you can do instead of doing that kind of thing is you could create a scheduler for each various priority you want. And instead of polluting the interface of the scheduler, the most basic thing is you want to do this. Now, one thing you might ask is, why do we have these two overloads, right? Why don't we just have schedule with action and time span, and that this one is really the same as this one with time span zero. Well, it's not actually the same, because if you can do schedule of action with time span zero, but this one isn't the same. What this one is saying is, you know, do it as soon as you can, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to happen before something that's scheduled at time span one, right? It's just saying, just do it whenever is best for you, but, you know, soon. And so that's kind of the difference between those two. And so now we have the scheduler thing. We introduce another type, which is basically a collection of helper methods, very much like we do with other patterns, like the iObservable with observable, or what exists with iNumerable and enumerable. So we have the scheduler type, which is a static class, and it has a number of methods on it. And one of those properties actually is now, and another one's later. And these are two of the schedulers that we have. So let's talk about later first, because it's probably the simplest of all schedulers. So when you schedule a unit of work to happen on the later scheduler, then what happens is that it will use the thread pool to complete that. And if there's an implementation of the parallel task, well, the TPL, then what we do is what we actually use is tasks to do that. And for the time-based operations, we use system threading timer to do those. The now one, so this is like the free-threaded world, and the now one will complete the operation on the current thread. And if you schedule an action to happen, then it'll happen as soon as possible on the current thread. But there is one caveat to that, and I'll explain that in just a second. If you schedule something to happen in time on the current thread, it'll actually sleep that amount of time and then execute the action as soon as it can. Now, what do I mean by as soon as it can? Well, you could have a current thread going along, and it has a now with some action, and then it goes along again, and it has another now of action too. So how do we do this? Well, in general, actually, these things can be recursive, and we don't want to actually keep going deeper and deeper into these nows, because, for example, repeat will keep invoking now and now and now again. We actually have stack overflows. So what we do is we have, when you do a now, I'll explain what this means. So if you're the outermost now on the stack that gets invoked, then you say now of some action, then that's the same thing as directly just invoking the action, except there's one additional thing. It installs what's called a trampoline. So right actually at this point, it installs trampoline. And then it directly invokes the action. And then it basically does work in trampoline until empty. Okay? So that means if directly invoked this action causes another now to happen, it doesn't directly invoke its action. Instead, what it would do is it will, if you do another one, like this is 0 and this is 1, then this one will actually queue A1 in the trampoline. Which means it will happen after the outermost now completes. It will schedule it to work. So that way you get kind of this tail call type of behavior. So that's what now does. So that's now and later. There's also schedulers for the represent the dispatcher, which uses the dispatcher begin invoke, and it also uses the dispatcher timer. There's one for Windows Forms, which you pass in a control to get, and that's called the control scheduler. And it uses the Windows Forms timer and the control begin invoke to do its thing. And let's see, besides that, the other thing, we also introduced two other extension methods. So we had those two schedule methods, but we wanted two other ones, which are kind of like these fixed point schedule things. So they're kind of fun, they're kind of geeky, but we use them internally, and we decided, well, if they're useful for us, why not just expose them to other people? And so we have schedule that takes a iScheduler, and it takes... So normally the original one took an action, right? An iScheduler and an action. But this one takes an action of action. So what happens is that when you... So if you call this one, what you do is you say schedule, and you'd say basically self, and then you'd have the body of code you want to schedule, and any place in here that you call self, it will invoke the same body of code again, but schedule it to happen on the same scheduler after this one is completed. And this thing returns a disposable, and if you dispose it, it will dispose not only this, or it will not only cancel this portion, it will cancel all pending recursive requests. So that's kind of what this one does. And so, for example, concat at its core actually uses this kind of thing, where it runs the body of concat where it subscribes to the thing, and then when it completes, it basically runs itself again to subscribe again.
So that means that all concatenations happen on the same thread?
Same execution context.
Yes.
Yeah, because if it's three-threaded, it might change threads each time you do it. But yeah, that's right. And then we also have a schedule. So we have a fixed point for the time-based one, too. And that one's action. You can kind of wonder, can you guess what it would be, right? So it's action of something, and it has a time span. And the question is, to the viewers, what do you think that something should be in here if it's the fixed point version of this one? Well, it's action of time span. So inside of this one, you can say schedule, self, and you have your body. Instead of just invoking self, and by the way, you schedule with a time span here. So this is the original starting time span. And if you want to schedule yourself, for example, if you have a timer that fires more than once, well, how do you do that? Well, you could do, so a timer that fires, for example, every, well, time span things, you could do the timer right here, and then at the end you would basically say self of the same time span. And then this returns back an iDisposable, and if you dispose this thing, then it basically stops the timer.
So this looks awfully lot like generate.
Yes, it does look very much like generate. It's like kind of like this way of doing fixed point recursive type of things. So instead of having this whole, for a while we actually had a schedule that you scheduled a time span, we actually had a time, had return an iTimer. But that's not quite as general. And if you're worried, for example, that, using a different schedule each time you do it is too expensive, you don't have to do that because the implementation of the scheduler can pool the timers, just like you might pool threads or something. And so instead of making that part of the interface again, like we talked about priorities, instead we break that out and let the implementation do that differently. So that's what the scheduler is. And so from there, the next question is, well, so how do we actually use these things, right, in Rx? So every place that we create concurrency, there is an overload that takes a scheduler. And the rule we use about which parameter it is if the operator has a source, then we make the second parameter of that be the scheduler. So X is, for example, sample. Sample, and here you pass in, normally you pass in the time span, which is sample, but now you can also pass in a scheduler here, optionally. If you don't use the scheduler, then most operators will use the scheduler.later by default. And there are just a few that use scheduler.now, and that's like return and throw, empty, and start with. Besides that, everything else uses scheduler.later.
So you just said it's going to be the second argument, but it looks like to be the first argument here.
Yeah, since these are extension methods, that means this one's actually the first argument, which is basically means that the receiver is the, we're basically saying that the rule really is that the receiver gets priority here and should be the first argument. But if there is a schedule with the second argument at that point. But, for example, with return, it's not that way. So what you'd do is you'd have scheduler.return of 5, because this has no legitimate source, like an iObservable or iNumerable source. And so because of that, it becomes the first parameter. So you could have called observable return scheduler, comma 5, which is the same thing since this is an extension method. And there still is the observable.return of 5, and that happens, like I just said, to use the scheduler.now. And so that's kind of how it works. So every place we create concurrency, you can say which scheduler to use. Now, this actually solves most of the problem, because whenever you introduce concurrency, if you're careful to create at the right place, then for the most part, you can solve both the performance problems and the threat affinity problems. Now, there are some times when that's not the case, because you may happen to have things coming from two different places. Now, to solve that problem, all we do is we continue to do what we normally do, what we've done in the past, that is, and we do observe on, so you can still say X is observe on, and pass in a synchronization context. And this will transfer control to that synchronization context. But I would caution you not to use that too much, because you can introduce performance problems, because you can post too much, and posting is somewhat expensive. In general, it's better to create the right concurrency in the right place to begin with, but sometimes you can't. There's also X is subscribe on. And this makes it so that when you subscribe to this thing, that the subscription to X happens on the synchronization context and the disposal, and or the unsubscription, however you want to think about it. Now, the last thing I want to say here is that there's also overloads that you can pass in for the control scheduler and the dispatcher scheduler. You can directly pass those in here. So you can say, like, scheduler dispatcher. So you can say X is observe on scheduler dispatcher, and that's also okay. It'll use the dispatcher synchronization context that corresponds to the dispatcher for the this dispatcher scheduler, essentially. And that's kind of, this is for solving thread affinity problems that you may have even if you create concurrency in the right places. So that's kind of like the long and short of what we've done. We're really excited about it. We hope this will really improve things a lot. And one other thing I want to talk about is how we're using this internally to do something kind of fun. And this is kind of random, but I think it's a good point that kind of demonstrates or validates the idea that as being at least generally the right direction. So one of the hard things we've had is how to test Rx internally, right? And this takes a number of different forms, both because of the fact that since things are reactive, as opposed to interactive, where the environment's driving as opposed to the program, it gets a little bit more difficult to test. And It's also difficult because the most difficult ones have been historically the time-based ones to test. For example, if you do observable.interval and you want to test this, you have to do like a sufficiently large interval that the variation that might occur because of the timing will be small enough that you can actually verify that it does what it wants. But even if you do that, then the tests take longer to complete, right? And so it becomes a little difficult. So what we do now is we actually use a test. We create our own type called test scheduler that has its own time. It doesn't use the wall clock time like all the rest of the things do. So when you schedule things for it to happen at a certain time, it actually will schedule them at its own time. And so we basically virtualize time. And we have this, the test scheduler kind of represents this abstract machine that has infinite concurrency capacity, but also takes one unit of time to complete an action. So, but they can have lots of things happening concurrently. And so we schedule things to happen. We basically say, run the test scheduler, and it runs things, and it runs them in the order of the time that you say, and it actually marks things when they happen with its virtualized timestamps. And then we can assert various things about the output. And this all happens, but we don't actually have to test things in real wall clock time. And we can also be careful because, for example, how do you test observable never, right? How do you say that observable never of like int, well, then it actually does what it's supposed to do, which is it never fires anything. Well, the way we do that is, first of all, you have to assume that everything goes via the scheduler, which it does by inspection. Once you've made that assumption, then you can go ahead and you can say, well, if I subscribe to this and I run the scheduler till it has nothing else scheduled, then I know that never is going to never do anything, because anything that could have been done would have been done on the scheduler, and therefore never does actually do what I said it should do. And so internally we use the iScheduler mechanism in order to abstract away and virtualize time, but you can also do a number of other things with schedulers. So for example, if you have like high performance requirements, you might be able to have a better implementation of the scheduler that's more efficient for your environment. So we're pretty excited about this and hope that this will really solve a lot of the problems that we've had and that you've had.
Yep, so please download the bits, take a look at it, play with it, and give any feedback you have on it on the forum.
Yep.
Thanks, Wes.
Thank you.